And more times than I can count, I have called you mine. You have stood by me in my
life. Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, on the road, but broadcasting live. Lots of programs each week I broadcast from our sister station in Los Angeles, KPFK, 30 years, 6 hours every Wednesday morning from midnight to 6 a.m. on the West Coast, but 3 to 9 on the East Coast. You can listen over the Internet. WPFW, our sister station again for 30 years, 5 days a week, Monday to Friday, 3 to 4. Large audience, active audience, a very upbeat and positive audience. And, of course, our sister station that I started on March 10th, 1977, in New York City, WBAI. That's a long time, 36 years. And our place where we originate all of our broadcasts, the Progressive Radio Network. And just confirmed this morning, we're number one internet radio and progressive radio in the world. So we're happy of all the thousands coming every day to listen new, brand new. And all those who have been listening, please share information, because that's how we create movements and that's how we get stuff done. And talking about getting stuff done, we have a lot to get done today. I intentionally have not had a guest so we could get to commentaries. The latest on health and healing and why ginkgo biloba is really important for you. But also we're going to look at the lychee fruit. Most people only get it once a year for a short period of time in the spring, but you should get the juice or get it frozen or dried because it has a lot of benefits. I'll tell you which benefits. Also, we're going to talk about, are your arteries turning into bone? That means getting really stiff. That's not a good thing. And evidence mounts from Johns Hopkins Medical Center that 4 lifestyle changes will protect your heart and reduce your risk of death. We'll share what those are, plus a lot more on health. Then a brief commentary from Patrick Mustin from Scientific America. Dear American consumers, please don't start eating healthfully. Sincerely, the food industry. I'll share that with you. Also today, I'm going to talk about the jury came to a decision on this Amish farmer about selling raw milk. And out in Wisconsin, I'll give you what happened in that case. A new controversy surrounding genetically engineered wheat and why it's one more reason why we should completely ban all genetically engineered things. And then austerity hits home with a vengeance. Andy Pisek from Connecticut Post. Also today, Russians prove small-scale organic can feed the world. Very interesting article and a short commentary from Charles Gerber at Truthout, Consumerism and its Discontents. Also from Phil Rockstro from Countercurrents, the United States of Whatever, Ecocide and the Soul of a Nation, and Monitoring System to Globally Track All Social Media Claims on the Dangers of Vaccine. Now, this is really interesting because both the British and American scientists have developed a computerized monitoring system that sends out an alert anytime there's misinformation on any legitimate public concern about vaccination. And they're going to do this in 144 countries. That means that they control, the vaccine manufacturers, what is legitimate information versus misinformation. And therefore, they're going to say that people should be blocked from being able to send this out over the internet. They shouldn't be able to publish their information anywhere, and they should be vilified. So this is just one more step in that long chain. Needless to say, they won't be able to do this before I get out my newest documentary, the major article. So the people who need to know will know the truth. That these are pathological, sociopathic personalities running these companies, and we intend to expose them. Also, something I mentioned on my talkback program but I wanted to get it out to the larger audience, and that is the Journal of the American Medical Association has published a study showing how much it costs you and how much profit is made when there's an error of any kind in a hospital. It's astronomical profits, and you're paying for it, so I'll deal with that. Let's begin. You can smell it in generally the summer fall in New York City, late summer, early fall, running around Central Park. Every runner has experienced this. It smells like someone threw up. It's not. It's the oldest tree in the world, the ginkgo biloba tree. Most people will see people of an oriental background out there picking it up. The average person doesn't care. Well, they do, because they've used it for a long time. An interesting piece of information by Sayer G. from GreenMedInfo on its life-extending properties. So I'll share this with you, because I know many people in this audience are conscientious about making healthy choices to live a longer and healthier life. We do know that there is biological imperative that we make positive choices, and we can literally double the cell life. Now, it depends upon what you've done prior to those good changes. I once remember having a conversation with Linus Pauling, and he said, one of my greatest regrets is not being more into health and a healthy lifestyle for the first 50 years of my life. He still lived to be, I think, 95 or 96. But had he made healthier choices earlier, he would still be alive today. There's no reason at a cellular level that you can't live about 150 years in good health. But again, it depends upon what you've done up to this point. So let's say you can't live 150 because you've smoked or drank, or you've been overweight many times, or you've taken drugs or medications. But there's no reason we can't add 20 years onto your life, really good years. And so you look around and you look at all the plants and the bacteria and fungi, and you look at all the things that we're given to start with, and it's from these that we have to put together some common sense. Hence eating raw food more often, concentrated raw fruits, juicing. Concentrated juicing's powders. So the more powders, juices, and fresh food we put into our body, the healthier the cell. And there's two types. Greens detoxify chelate out heavy metals like lead, cadmium, mercury. And the fruits, more often than not, are able to repair DNA, the polyphenols. Actually go in there and help undo the damage done, whether it's in your brain or your heart, your lungs, your liver, your kidneys. That's the idea. Then on top of that are herbs. And at the top of that list is ginkgo biloba. And somatic cells within multicellular organisms perish. Their germlines, stem cells, are capable of infinite self-replication, which in the case of ginkgo biloba has been going on for at least a quarter of a billion years. That's why it's the oldest tree. Ginkgo biloba is the world's oldest living plant. In fact, it's known as a living fossil because it has no close living relatives and appears to be about 270 million years old in the fossil record. It is also one of the rare flowering plants, meaning it has distinct male and female organisms. Not only has this hardy species survived three mass extinction events over the past quarter of a billion years, but it was found to be the only surviving plant species near the epicenter of the August 6, 1945 Hiroshima atomic bomb blast. By the way, in September, the area around the blast center was examined, and six of the ginkgo biloba trees were found standing. They budded shortly after the blast without major deformity and are still alive today. So here's what we know about ginkgo biloba. There's a lot of good scientific evidence that our cognitive decline, memory loss, and Alzheimer's and dementia, as well as visual disturbances like glaucoma, are all due to inflammation and a reduction in the power of the mitochondria cells. And so in comes Ginkgo. Ginkgo can do the following. It can impact brain aging, allergies, conjunctivitis. It can help detoxify the body from aluminum toxicity. It should be used if you have the thickening of the arteries, and I'm going to talk about it in a few moments. And if you have autism spectrum disorder. In fact, there's more than 100 potential medical applications based upon good quality ginkgo biloba research. So my suggestion is get yourself some ginkgo. I would say 200 milligrams a day, maybe 100 in the morning and 100 in the afternoon. We hear a lot about the drugs that kill people, and yet people continue to take them, and they're not banned. Ibuprofen is but one. Quote, long-term high-dose use of painkillers such as ibuprofen is equally hazardous in terms of heart health attacks as the drug Vioxx, which was withdrawn due to its potential dangers, researchers said, end quote. Now, if you remember, Vioxx killed about 60,000 to 500,000 individuals. There's a big discrepancy based upon what the numbers of people who died were. A lot of deaths. Then there is inflammation, and people are taking these non-steroidal anti-inflammatories like ibuprofen or Vioxx or aspirin because they want to turn off pain. Now, pain and unhealthy levels of inflammation are becoming the biggest cause of disease in the world. So our interest is not removing what causes the pain. Our interest is creating a false signal in the body so that you kill the impact of pain. You don't feel it. And ibuprofen is a perfect example. It's a petrochemical-derived product. It has been shown to increase heart attack, increase cardiac and all-cause death when combined with aspirin, with over 24 serious adverse effects, including anemia, DNA damage, hearing loss, hypertension, influenza death, miscarriages. In fact, and it's really unique in how bad it is, and yet it's still so popular. So let's just say that you're coming across this program for the first time. And the profile of the average person coming every day to this program is a college-educated woman between 36 and 45, generally listening to the program at home at night over the internet from the archives. So you think, well, okay, my mother has pain, and she's taking these non-steroidal anti-inflammatories, and I don't want her to get a heart attack, but I don't know what else to suggest. Here's what you can do for pain. Ginger. Ginger, generally 1,000 milligrams a day in divided doses, is as effective as many drugs, including ibuprofen for relieving pain in women associated with their menstrual cycle, primarily a dysmenorrhea. Now, there's two ways of taking ginger. The one I suggest for its greatest medicinal value is to take about a 1 to 2 inch piece of the ginger root, and you scrape the skin off, and then you juice it into a larger 16-ounce or 32-ounce glass of juice. And that would make a big difference. Now, in that juice, I would also combine ginkgo biloba and vitamin C. In fact, animal studies have found that a combination to be equal or better than ibuprofen for reducing asthma-associated respiratory inflammation. And you could also take astaxanthin, and I would say 10 to 20 milligrams, ginkgo at about 200 milligrams, and vitamin C at 2,000 milligrams. You could use Chinese skullcap. In fact, there was a study that found that Chinese skullcap was equivalent to ibuprofen in reducing pain. I would put into that juice or a smoothie 3,000 milligrams of the omega-3 fatty acids, and they have been shown to be as effective as ibuprofen in reducing arthritis pain, and they don't have the side effects. Then there is the ginseng called Panax, P-A-N-A-X, Panax. And another study showed that it has analgesic and anti-inflammatory activity similar to ibuprofen, and it has anti-rheumatoid arthritis property, but no side effects. And then a real superstar is St. John's wort. St. John's wort was twice as effective as ibuprofen as a painkiller, but it also helps with depression. And then, for those of you who've heard me mention over the years, anthocyanins. Anthocyanins would come from cherries, raspberries, pomegranate. And these are very powerful, and they're effective as ibuprofen and the other non-steroidal anti-inflammatories, naproxen, in suppressing inflammatory-associated enzymes, such as the COX-2 inhibitors. So let's just say you throw a pint of raspberries and, let's say, a pint of pitted sweet cherries into a juice or a blender. You also have holy basil that contains compounds that are anti-inflammatory, equal to aspirin or ibuprofen, and then just good old organic extra virgin olive oil. In fact, the chemicals in it are strongly anti-inflammatory. Now, there are a lot of other substances, cat's claw and many others, but I'm just talking about what you could do if you wanted something that would be easy to take into the body. And finally, using lychee, which is a delicious fruit, can make a big difference because it can help you boost your endurance for workouts. So for all of you exercising out there, drinking some lychee juice, which is easily available in the health food stores, is very high in the antioxidants, including varieties that are known to help the body oxidize or metabolize fat. So, there was a study after 2.5 months comparing those that used it and those that did not use it, a big difference. This was published in the Journal of Clinical Biochemistry and Nutrition. So, that's what's important, all right, as far as health and nutrition. Now I want to share this with you. This is from Scientific American, from Patrick Mustaine. Dear American consumers, please don't stop eating healthfully. Sincerely, the food industry. A disturbing trend has come to our attention. You, the people, are thinking more about health, and you're starting to do something about it. This cannot continue. Sure, there's always been talk about health in America. We often encourage it. The thing is, we only want you to think about health and talk about health in a certain way, equating health with how you look, instead of outcomes like quality of life and reduced disease risk. Your superficial understanding of health has a great influence over your purchasing decisions, and we're ready for that. Whether you choose to go low-calorie, low-fat, gluten-free, or inevitably giving up and accept the fact that you can't resist our Little Debbie snacks, potato chips, and ice cream novelties. Whatever the current health trend, we respond by developing and marketing new products. We can also show you how great some of our current products are and always have been. For example, when things are not looking so good for fat, our friends at Welch were able to point out that their chewy fruit snacks were fat-free, low-fat, healthy. Then the tide turned against carbohydrates. Our friends in meat and dairy were happy to show you their steaks, meats, and cheeses were low-carb choices. Low carbs, healthy. But we're getting uneasy. In 2009, Congress commissioned the first interagency working group to develop standards for advertising foods to children. Well, the Federal Trade Commission and the Center for Disease Control and the FDA and the United States Department of Agriculture identified these organization says, quote, having the expertise and experience in child nutrition, child health, and psychology and education to do the right job. We were dismayed when they released their report last year. The guidelines said that foods advertised to children must provide, quote, a meaningful contribution to a healthy diet. For example, any food marketed to children must, quote, contain at least 50% by weight, one or more of the following, fruits, vegetables, whole grains, fat-free or low milk or yogurt, fish, right, eggs, nuts, seeds, and beans, end quote. This report was potentially devastating. These organizations, experts in nutrition, were officially outlining what constituted a meaningful contribution to a healthy diet. Thankfully, we have a ton of money, and we're able to use it to get the whole thing withdrawn. In a public comment posted on the FTC website, our friends at General Mills pointed out that under the guidelines, the most commonly consumed foods in the United States would be considered unhealthy. Specifically, according to General Mills, quote, up to 100 of the most commonly consumed foods and beverages in America, 88 of the 100 would fail these guidelines and their proposed standards, end quote. So you see, if you people start eating the way the nutrition experts recommend you eat, that would delegitimize almost 90% of the products we produce. Do you realize how much money that would cost us? According to the General Mills letter, if everyone in the United States started eating healthily, it would cost us $503 billion per year. That might affect our ability to pay CEOs like General Mills' Ken Powell annual compensation of $12 million. But revamping the food environment will also cost you money. The General Mills letter stated, quote, a shift by the average American to the diet would conservatively increase the individual's annual food spending by $1,600. Okay. But a paper from George Washington University School of Public Health estimated the annual cost to an individual just for being obese is $8,000 per year. We like to think of this as a small price to pay for consumer freedom. Yep. So evidently you, the audience, by shifting over to healthier choices in your life, more green products, healthier diet, beverages, you're a big concern to them. So they're putting a lot of money into the idea that you're not going to stay on your program. I don't believe them. I'm seeing too many people who are. But here's one little lady. I don't know how old she is. I think she's 8 or 9 years old, who managed to get into McDonald's, you know, the makers of the hamburgers, fast food chain, a stockholder meeting. And she had a chance to make a short statement and then a response by the CEO of, I think it's only 2.5 minutes. I think it's worth listening to.
We have a question regarding nutrition at McDonald's, and it's from Hannah Robertson.
Hi, Hannah.
My name is Hannah, and I am 9 years old. My mom has taught me that there are things in life that just aren't fair, like when your pet dies or you have to miss a special event because you have a cold. Something that I don't think is fair is when big companies try to trick kids into eating food that isn't good for them by using toys and cartoon characters. If parents haven't taught their kids about healthy eating, then the kids probably believe that junk food is good for them because it might taste good. Then they will just keep bugging their parents to give them that food. It isn't fair that there are so many kids my age and younger that are getting really sick with diseases like diabetes and obesity. That is really sad. It would be nice if you stopped trying to trick kids into wanting to eat your food all the time. I make cooking videos with my mom that show kids that eating healthy can be fun and yummy. We teach them that eating a rainbow of fruits and veggies makes kids healthier, smarter, and happier, because that is true. Mr. Thompson, don't you want kids to be healthy so they can live a long and happy life?
Anna, thank you very much for your question. And by the way, it was good to meet you out front. Couple of things, Hannah. First off, we don't sell junk food, Hannah. My kids also eat McDonald's. When they were about your size, so my son was with us today, was a little bit bigger, was a football player. And also, they cook with me at home. I love to cook. We cook a lot of fruits and veggies at home. We sell a lot of fruits and veggies at McDonald's and are trying to sell even more. With the apples that we introduced into the Happy Meals, we sell different fruits and different varieties. I was telling you a little bit earlier about things we'd like to introduce even more if there's an affinity for them, like kiwi on a stick and pineapples. And we serve side salads, and we serve those for a dollar on our dollar menu, and they're very affordable. And so there's a lot of things that we've done, our chicken nugget Happy Meals, fat-free milk. We also just changed the chocolate fat-free milk. We're making a lot of changes at McDonald's, and we'll continue to. I think it's really great that you want to continue eating more fruits and more vegetables. I honestly hope even more kids do. I know that as my kids came up, sometimes I had to nudge them a little bit more to eat some more fruits and vegetables, but they did eat quite a bit of fruits and vegetables, and that's what we served in our household as well. So thanks so much for the question, Hannah.
Now, there's a 9-year-old who managed to speak truth to power, and he responded. Now, here's what I'd like you to do. I know we have a lot of people with common sense in this audience. Deconstruct his argument. There are 7 things that could show that he is wrong. What are they? Even give a few of them. 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888 for part of our talk back. Also, our newest figure just came in today, and we have tens of thousands using almost 10 million minutes to listen to this program. And we thank you. We're number one, I believe, either number one in the world or number two in the world, number one in the United States and South America and Canada, of people listening to a radio program over the telephone, because you're not limited anymore. You can listen to it anywhere you are, anytime you want. So just write down the number. This way you always have it. 619-550-0869. 619-550-0869. On my TalkBack program, at the end of the show, Luann Panessi, who reads questions from the audience, because I'm on the road and don't have a chance to read them, we have a Twitter, big Twitter with thousands and thousands of people on PRN, but I've never been there. I've never read it once. I just don't have the time. But our staff does. It's actively engaged, and people share information constantly. And a question was asked about looking at the world and would we be having Americans stand up and speak out about the austerity programs that are happening now and that are happening overseas? And I said no. I did not see in the foreseeable future any major movement in the United States that would direct itself towards the inequalities, because we have no unity. We don't have the unions out there on behalf of all people, let alone their own membership. I believe many union members have been sold out. I believe that all the major institutions have been compromised, and the American public is afraid of authority. But that was just a general overview. But in Europe, there were 5 stages you have to go through before you finally throw the people out of power, and then you no longer engage them. So you don't give back any more of your pensions, and you reestablish a living wage, and you reestablish those benefits necessary for a civil society to function. And then you support those people, the small business people, and you make sure that those who have evaded taxes pay them, those who have committed crimes pay for them. But that doesn't happen because of a spring awakening. That's the beginning of it. But it's an evolutionary process. It generally takes about 3 to 4 years. We're a year away from the final stage before those in power, in government, in Greece, in Italy, in Spain, in Portugal, in Ireland, forget England. It's a worthless country anymore as far as its body politics, and it's incapable of doing anything to change in a meaningful way. There are certainly meaningful individuals, and there are groups and individuals who are trying, but they're up against the same kind of oligarchical power structure and repressive body politic and police state that we have in the United States. I don't see them changing anything, just getting worse for citizens. But in many other, Slovakia and other countries, yes. But then I want to get into the specific nuance. According to Andy Pisek from the Connecticut Post, in an article entitled "Austerity Hits Home with a Vengeance," just a 2 paragraphs tells us something. Quote, "Austerity is a word we don't hear much in the United States, as business elites, politicians, and the corporate media avoid the word at all costs. They talk instead at great length about deficits, out-of-control spending, and the need for all of us to share the pain. This is a convenient dodge, and an intentional one, for it shifts attention away from the super rich and the unprecedented upward redistribution of wealth we're experiencing in the last 40 years. People in the rest of the world, as well as people of color here, by contrast, are all too familiar with austerity. They've been force-fed it in large doses over many years, largely to the benefit of U.S. investors, and often literally at gunpoint. Though each case varies, the general scenario is similar. To qualify for much-needed high-interest loans, states around the globe cut social programs, submit to privatization of public services, bust unions, slash wages while loosening regulations that protect the environment and workplace. The results invariably are the further impoverishment of the vast majority, greater profits for investors, and an increase in the purchase by states of the weaponry required to quell the social unrest that generally follows. Weaponry in the United States is common, never mind the misery of large swaths of the population, the violent repression of dissent, overflowing prisons of all those dead bodies. To business elites, all are acceptable offshoots of profit-taking. Name a country in the global South, and it has almost certainly been through this ringer, more often than once, and sometimes no end. Now the same phenomenon is being inflicted on the people of the industrialized North, beginning with Europe, which was hit earlier and more harshly than the United States. With few exceptions, the people of the nations of Europe have experienced a decline in recent years in their living standards, all except for corporate and banking elites, who are wealthier than ever. Since the fall of communism, Eastern Europe, to cite just the most extreme case, has become a huge new source of highly profitable investment opportunities for global capital, and the resulting pauperization of that part of the world has, for now, shattered the dreams. The U.S. is no longer immune to austerity, and President Obama's decision to slash Social Security and Medicare benefits is only the latest blow. As living standards for most of us fall ever lower, the richest of the rich grow even richer, far richer than any ruling class has ever been. Austerity is and will continue to be a truly bipartisan affair, and liberals who think the Democrats are a significant alternative and right-wingers who believe the Democrats have been taken over by the Marxist-Leninists do well to reconsider that, one, more wealth was redistributed from the 99% of the super-rich under Clinton than Reagan, and two, President Obama, with his cohort of Goldman Sachs advisors and General Electric executives, has carried out virtually the same policies as his predecessor. For much of the 20th century, a large portion of the U.S. population was shielded from the ravages of global capitalism and believed they had a stake in the empire. Though those illusions are rapidly being shed, many turn not to resistance, but to narcotics such as alcohol, pornography, and sports. More ominous is the state's incessant and intimidating call to rally around the flag in opposition to this season's whoever they're putting as the boogeyman, and so on. The most effective and dangerous ploy, however, is the super rich's trick of fomenting divisions within the populace, where they might otherwise be united. Thus, we get the hilarious spectacle of welfare queen Michelle Bachmann, a longtime recipient of large agribusiness handouts, rallying a segment of the population by railing against benefit programs for the poor and working class, her words received by the intelligentsia with grim seriousness rather than the derision they warranted. From the Arab Spring to the ongoing and frequent massive demonstrations in England, Portugal, Spain, and Greece, and other countries in Europe, to perhaps most significantly the revolution in South America, sweeping much of Latin America. The task now is to revitalize the Occupy sphere. But I don't believe that will happen. You see, it is not the youth turning out in mass anywhere in the world that will cause a shift in the politics of power and money and policymaking. It is when the working middle class, the professional class, and the retired professional class protest, because they're not impulsive. They are clear-minded. They are the last to join any effort like this, but they would become a central point of focus. In their midst are some of the great minds, artists, creators, educators, and even former business professionals and government leaders who have nothing to lose and have seen the light. When you have that group of people mass, then you have movements that matter. And when you look at the movements in the United States, when was the last time we saw the medical community in mass protest anything for the average American or even their patients? We haven't. Or nurses? We haven't. Well, how about university professors? Students? Clearly, shouldn't the students be protesting in mass the usurious rates, almost 100% increase in the rates, and some of those rates could go up to 10%? We haven't. How about small business people? We haven't. How about professionals, architects, lawyers, engineers, CPAs? We haven't. How about upper mobile or at least more conservative and wealthy retirees in gated communities? There was over 20 to 30 million of them. We haven't. So you have to look for those individuals to become involved in any movement before you're going to see it challenge the authority. The reality of and the outward toll inflicted by greenhouse gas engendered climate change is clearly evident, at least from my perspective, to all but the corrupt and devoutly ignorant with intent. And according to Phil Rockstro, increasing destructive and deadly tornadoes and hurricanes and destruction of marine life and even severe droughts and rapacious wildfires, landscapes of death, scattered debris and shattered lives. But what are the effects upon the human psyche of chronic denial? You're asked to join and you choose not to. Indifference and compulsive procrastination are related to a matter as all-encompassing and crucial as our relationship with the climate of our planet. Our current catastrophe of estrangement termed our way of life, we experience as a denuding of resonance, meaning, and purpose, as a prevailing sense of emptiness and unease, as a craving for distraction, as an incoherent longing for change and transformation, yet a defiance to the point of paralysis insofar as any means to expedite longing into societal altered action. We stay home. We stay distracted. We become disengaged. Estrangement from nature is estrangement from the landscape of the soul. The cosmos and the soul carry the same blueprint. The forces were forged in the same fires of infinity. In matters galactic and all else, there is not a form that rises, waxes, and wanes in nature that does not have an analog in our human physicality, our facilities, and our endeavors. To turn a blind eye to the natural world, as we have done, translates into a form of ecocide. Perception is degraded, language truncated. Life becomes dispossessed of purpose and meaning. Apropos the rise and banal persistence of the United States of whatever. Under these circumstances, whatever translates into inner and extent, deadly superstorms, ecocide, desertification, including the desertification of our language. As we decimate the Earth's biodiversity, we diminish our lexicon. Our thoughts cannot take wing. Our imaginings cannot take root and flower. Our passions cannot flow. Our putrefying pathologies cannot be composted. Divested of an elegance of thought, expression, and action, devoid of a deep connection to and denied of constant dialogue with earth, sky, water, and wind, we cannot retain enough humanity to remain viable as a species. By evincing a state of mind that is indifferent to the wanton destruction of our planet's interdependent web of biodiversity, we lay waste, on a personal and collective basis, to the evolving vital ecosystem of the psyche, thereby creating a bland, dismal, corporate monoculture that is both manifest and internalized. The emptiness of our personal lives in the neoliberal corporate consumer state has grown increasingly unbearable. The carnage inflicted on our planet is indefensible, and its present trajectory is tragically untenable. Our last best option is to the top-to-bottom revisionism. To revision what? In diametric opposition, at paradigm's end, we are witness to the deranged marriage of a prolificate and passionate need to combine the covert offshore bank accounts of the greed-maddening hyper-wealthy and the teeming landfill are dismal emblems of the late capitalist madness. The moribund mythos, manic in the face of its undoing, of productivity, exists at the core of the capitalist delusion. Discussing the matter with a capitalist true believer is like talking to an obsessive lunatic about his vast collection of ribbons. Behind the situation is the crackpot pragmatism of state capitalism, that all things must have a practical purpose in order for proper exploitation, for maximum productivity, as a means of generating obscene sums of money for a tidy, loose-knit cabal of global economic elite. Yes, yet the motives driving the mania of a system geared to perpetual growth conveniently are omitted from almost all mainstream discussions. Never once do you hear the word sustainability. And that is unfortunate. The future is always uncertain. Climate change denial, political duopoly, the corrosive effect of empire maintained by militarism on a foundering republic. Yes, the unhealthy food manufactured and consumed under corporate state oligarchy. The catastrophic consequences that the demise of the public commons has on the human personality, in combination with the societal repercussions of a populace that receives the vast majority of information from within the bubble of an enveloping media hologram attendant to a grid of authoritarianism and that determines and degrades the criteria of almost all experience in the corporate state. Yet these unhinged conventionalities do not create a catalyst to action, but inflict angst. And hence we are immobilized by fear. How can this be? By what means does passivity before and complicity in one's own debasement become normalized? By small measure, by small denial, by small bribes as a reward for compliance and severe consequences for attempts at defiance. That's how this state of affairs serves as the sine qua non for any reign of oppression and cultural track towards catastrophe. If an individual is coerced into conformity by his or her childhood being threatened, even by implicit means, angst will be experienced. As a result, one will attempt to find a means of relieving the incurred sense of unease, and this is where the small bribes that serve as palliatives to ease angst come in. If challenged, implacable power results in a termination of employment or a stint in incarceration, of which a record will follow you through your life. Most of will find the repercussions of defying authority unbearable. One's image of oneself will be endangered, or so it seems, by such a circumstance. And hence, who will be first in line? Yet what are the consequences of submission in regard to one's sense of self? Because in order to submit, an individual must shunt from consciousness the painful implications of one's predicament. A general altering of perception occurs. Thus, for example, climate change denial is but part of a parcel of a larger and forced cosmology of deception, both personal and societal in origin. At our present rate, the oceans and seas of the world will be dead in probably the next 30 years. Humankind has become a mindless, devouring leviathan. Slice open our collective belly, and the ill-gotten bounty of our besieged earth will be disgorged. Yet tone-deaf and rapacious, we are devouring the world in a manner that is closer in form to a banal pop song, a pestilence of ditties, resonant of the landfill, and descending in the form of consumerist locusts. When our days are denuded of depth, meaning, and inspired purpose, we gorge our bellies in an attempt to alleviate the aches of emptiness. The operatives of corporate commercial hologram have induced us to devour the planet like serving of pancakes. Yet the emptiness within only grows. We have been enticed to believe that that remedy will be found in more of what caused our misery in the first place. Relief, even redemption, will be found in yet more. Thus we come upon the insatiable Leviathan that glides within. We are lodged in the monster's belly, wherein we mistake his personal appetite for his own. In this way, the consumer is consumed by the collective. How does one sate a force that is insatiable? By sizing what? One's own unique identity? The angel whose name is enough arrives within one's reclaimed human voice. It comes down to this, ecology or catastrophe, because one's humanity is formed and rounded by one's limits. We must be open to the infinity of forms that is the ecosystem of the soul, but not allow vanity to attempt to claim dominion over what is ungovernable. Thus one regains one's soul by speaking in human voice, yet it is tinged with universal fire. But we, human beings, we have to understand that we must stop the empty appetites from transmuting into the yearnings of a corporate state, and instead realign with the heart. Thereby, emptying motions become emotion. Passion deepens into compassion. The matter does not involve searching for redemption or striving for perfection. Instead, it involves awakening, an awakening to the vast multi-universe of the dreaming heart. Therein, oceans are teeming with vivid life. And where there exists the implicit order of the soul, there exists with the completely understood rise of the force of the innate human. Back in a moment. Please stay with us.
Some small town I never knew. It told me you were on your way, but not where you were going to. You said you're following the sun, but do you really know for sure that after all is said and done, just what it is you're a place in my heart, I wish that your eyes could see.
I'd like to welcome all of you. I'm Gary Knoll. This is the place where people who have an intent on making it a better world come to share thoughts and energy and ideas. And I welcome you. The Progressive Commentary Hour is the most listened hour of 15 hours I broadcast each week. It will be on live this evening at 7 p.m. as it is each week. Today, I'm going to talk about the pro-vaccine movement that is trying to mandate vaccines in efforts to hold anyone who is not vaccinated legally liable for lawsuits. Dr. Tony Bark will be on. Also, Professor Mary Holland, Director of the Graduate Legal Skills Program at New York University School of Law, will be on. Robert Krakow, one of the nation's leading attorneys on vaccine-damaged children, will be on. And Alan Phillips, one of the few attorneys in the nation's practicing vaccine exemption and waiver law and the individual legal rights on vaccine policies, will be on. You won't want to miss it. Later in the week, we have Dmitry Orlov, who's going to be here talking about what happens in a collapse of a society. We'll talk with him and Dr. Brian Hooker, Professor of Biology, Northern California University. We're going to talk about information. Why is it that when CDC personnel lie before Congress, that they're not held accountable? We think they should be. So we have a lot of interesting topics to discuss this week. Let's go forward and say hello to Luann Panessi. Hi, Luann.
Hello, Gary. Well, I had one quick thing I wanted to mention, and I also, if I'm able to, I wanted to talk a little bit about the retreat as well. I do have someone here, just for the record. She says she's Linda from Louisville, Kentucky. She says, I'm not around a radio or a computer since I'm in sales and I travel quite a bit, and she just wants to express her gratitude for the service that you have by phone. And I suppose that you're gaining a lot of listeners by having this available to people. So there's one person.
We're hitting almost 100,000 on that.
That's great.
Yeah, that's people are listening.
No, I don't think anyone else has even thought to do that, so bravo. And if I may be so bold, I listening to this, your commentary was very, very humbling, to say the very least. And what you articulate is really one of the main reasons why people should consider taking a week or two away from their current routine and getting away to a place that is like no other, and to really examine their role in what's coming ahead. A lot of your listeners email me, as you know from the emails that I read to you. They want to know what can I do to A, protect myself and my family, B, to make a fundamental difference in the community I'm living with. And, you know, always we talk about the fact that first, go within. First, take care of you. Then examine how you relate to the world in terms of your relationships, the core people in your life. And then finally, when all that's stable and you've got real clarity and you're living more authentically, then you're really able to start becoming an activist and getting out there and making positive changes in your community. But people will say, I need a hands-on. I need to know how. How do I make healthy foods with what's out there? How do I garden? How do I set up hydroponics? How do I juice? You know, what is this raw food diet, and how do I apply it to my life? Is it hard to do? We've got all that coming up at the retreat.
I just want to take a moment on this because I'm still waiting for people to call in deconstructing the argument of the CEO of McDonald's to that 9-year-old girl's comments about stop tricking kids into thinking that it's a healthy meal by giving him some, you know, toy. This 2-week retreat will help change some people's lives. First, because it's comprehensive. The cooking class is almost 4 hours a day, but really hands-on. And I think that's one of the most important things a person can do to bring greater variety to their life and health is learn how to work with food. Because if you don't know how to cook, you're going to be eating in restaurants, or you're going to be eating such bland food that you're going to be tempted to step off the area and start eating junk food because of its heightened taste of salt and monosodium glutamate. So I want to show people the power of cooking, even raw food classes every day as well. Yoga, in depth, probably 2 or 3 times a day. Meditation, including moving energy around the body. Personal training to get people their own personalized exercise program. Juicing all day long. I'll be having more juices here than the Gerson Cancer Clinic has down there, and they just sit around juice all day. Lots of juices, but really tasty juices. And fruit bowls and being with nature, I think, is one of the most important things we can do. You're going to be doing personal counseling with anyone who wants it, which we've never done before. And then each evening, I'm going to be doing a workshop that I believe will empower people. And at the top of my list is going to be how to have a sustainable life. Where are the best places in America to live? How do you get there? How do you know what to buy, what not to buy? How do you get off the grid? What if you can't afford to move? What do you do then? So I take into account a curve from people who have no resources to people who have plenty of resources but don't know what to do, so that the information impacts everyone in a positive way. Another workshop is going to be on hydroponic and aquaponic and growing, starting your own home-based business. And people have to see how to do it hands-on. And that'll actually be a hands-on workshop.
And by the way, Gary, you have a lot of artists, in your audience, and they want to be able to be bring their skills to this too. And we are going to have, for the first time ever, sessions on art as healing, which I think
art as healing, yes, and the hands-on artwork with some extremely skilled artists, showing people how to take that inner journey. And there's going to be workshops on trauma, overcoming trauma and pain and anxiety. So this is going to be the most comprehensive 2 weeks ever. So I think we, as of Sunday, we were full, but then three people in a family couldn't make it in because the husband's obligations out of the country, so we have only room for three. I'm keeping it very limited. If people would like to come from July the 7th, which is a Sunday where there's orientation, but actually starts Monday and goes for that two-week period. You can come for 1 week or two. It's a fundraiser for this station, and it's $2,000 per week. And if you say the second week, it's only $1,500. So it's the lowest prices anywhere for what you're getting. There's no place I've ever seen anywhere that gives you all that you're going to get. You can do as little or as much as you want, and there's going to be a quiet time also where people can be in quiet relaxation, de-stressing, and then be able to come back with all these tools to start their life over in a positive way. The number to call, if you would like information, and we'd like to, we'll have someone speak, call you back and speak with you. And let me just get my number there. What is my number?
At the 877?
Yes.
627-5065. 877-627-5065.
877-627-5065. So from organic garden and starting your own business and best places to live and how to survive natural catastrophes to empowering yourself, overcoming limitations, getting off the grid, living a healthier life, reversing the aging process, all that is going to be discussed in depth. Now, I don't have anyone willing to challenge that, so why don't you challenge it, Luann?
Well, first of all, I could even, if you go food by food, I can come up with more than seven. First of all, they're giving, whatever he says, we're giving apples. They're not organic apples. They're apples that have been coated with the waxy coating. They're serving people meat that has been fed to animals that have been given hormones and antibiotics. So what he did was he sugar-coated this whole thing. They're giving fried foods, which are loaded with acrylamides. They're giving baked sugary desserts that are also full of acrylamides and are going to ruin people's blood sugars and increase their inflammatory markers. That's just the beginning of it. They're serving dairy products. What number am I up to? I think that's seven, right?
Okay.
Dairy products that are going to bloat them and affect their whole absorption in their GI tract and cause them mucus. And you know, everything that he said was basically to kind of appease a nine-year-old. And he kind of made it sound like, oh, yeah, I feed this stuff to my kids, as if that makes it okay. And I find that just as deceptive as tricking kids into buying. I think she had it. She nailed it right on.
She did. Here's what was not said. I don't know anyone that goes to McDonald's to buy an apple. It's that simple. All right? And they would be out of business if people went in and bought their dollar salad and their dollar apple. What you're getting when you eat at McDonald's is you're getting an enormous amount of sodium, saturated fats, trans fats, acrylamides, heterocyclic amines. You're getting genetically engineered beef. You're getting beef in one hamburger patty. You could have 1,000 different cows that were slaughtered that is all mixed together. Much of the land where that cattle is grown can be in South America, where there were once teeming biodiverse rainforests that were completely stripped, and that has caused ecological devastation because the precipitate matter, the moisture that goes up and forms clouds, then drops that cloud matter down as rain. When you start eliminating the source of your precipitation, you create desert. And now there's massive desertification to put in cheap soybeans that are genetically engineered in South America, in Brazil in particular, because it's an extremely corrupt country, and especially among the wealthy who control all the land. And as a result, those soybeans go to feed cattle or graze cattle, and then the land is dead. And so then that meat is shipped into the United States. The water it's used depletes our aquifers in the United States. The same is true. The cows are fed antibiotics because of the unsanitary conditions. And as a result, they're a very sick animal. So that is the story that was not told. And then just ask this, do we have any scientific evidence that supports that eating a fast food meal is a regular part of your diet encourages health or disease as compared to a vegetarian diet or the Mediterranean diet? And all of the scientific research supports that the Mediterranean or vegetarian diet is indeed a diet that reduces heart disease, cancer, stroke, diabetes, obesity, and extends the lifespan, whereas the fast food diet does just the opposite. So thank you, 9-year-old, for standing up and speaking words that were so right on. We need more of that. Isn't it interesting? We don't have any of the major scientists, physicians, with rare exception, nurses, dietitians, doing the same thing. And we should. We're out of time, and I want to thank you all for taking this time and listening to this program, and we look forward to sharing more tomorrow. Now let's say hello to standing in the wings, ready to come out. Yatrice Lee. Hi, Yatrice.
Just make me sound like a bat. In the wings, ready to come out. Today we're talking about, is it alienation or alien nation? The racial hustle behind immigration reform.
Great. Right now on Progressive Radio Network.